the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America, and welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. All over the United States of America today, there are protests in the streets of New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, and elsewhere concerning immigration. And some are calling it the Day Without Immigrants, as in massive protests, persons are supposed to be demonstrating whether or not they believe that immigration policy should be changed. And in this case, the protesters are saying, no, they do not believe they should be changed. And yet, I have to tell you, I think there's a very mixed message being sent here. I'm not sure there's any coherent message about immigration that is being sent or discussed here. And that's why we're going to discuss that topic today on the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to be discussing, again, how we revisit the immigration question from a Christian worldview perspective. Now, the importance of this just gets to the fact that there are tens and hundreds of thousands of Americans on the street. All right, folks, we're going to talk about that in just a moment. Get ready to call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Folks, we're going to be talking about immigration because that's what America is talking about. First, a review of some other issues in the news while you get ready to talk about that. In the UK, United Kingdom, they're warning against fertility tourism, because there are some couples who are trying to go offshore from the United Kingdom in order to have treatments for fertility that are illegal there. And they're illegal because they are considered unethical. And in this entire mash of what's going on here, you have people in the United Kingdom coming to where? Well, one of those places is the United States of America. That's right. We talked about this before. It's reproductive tourism. There are people who are leaving Britain, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland and coming to the United States to get fertility treatments that would be considered unethical and unobtainable and illegal there in the United Kingdom. But it's not just there. It turns out that some other countries are beginning now to offer this as a tourism package. And by the way, some of this is really, really interesting. It tells you a whole lot about where the world is going. For instance, The Guardian, a major paper in the United Kingdom, suggests that one firm is continuing to treat patients from the United Kingdom by booking them to fly and to take a ferry into international waters outside Irish jurisdiction. And for this case, it is for the administration of stem cell therapy. Others are coming to the United States in order to gain things like sex selection abortions and some in vitro fertilization treatments. You know, it ought to alarm us as a people that this country is becoming a destination for this kind of reproductive tourism. We are becoming something of a biomedical wild, wild west where almost anything is permissible. And when people are coming here and firms are packaging it as reproductive tourism, you come to the United States, see a Broadway play, you know, go and see a football game, go to Florida and go to the beach and along the way, spend some time at our clinic and you can have artificial insemination or you can have some of these pre-implantation diagnostic tests done on your embryo. It should really concern us. This is a test for the American conscience. One of the big issues going on right now in academia and in the publishing world is an outbreak of plagiarism. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with plagiarism, you know, it may not sound to you like one of the seven deadly sins, but it amounts to a theft of property, in this case, intellectual property, sometimes written property or recorded property. But plagiarism takes place when one scholar steals some other scholar's work or when one author steals another author's work. And in the old days, it was sometimes very hard to detect. In fact, in times past, it would often be detected long after the one who committed the crime of plagiarism was dead. But you know, the internet has really changed all that. Now that you have searchable text and now that you have people posting all this information all over the World Wide Web, plagiarism is being caught much more quickly. And that is the case with Kavya Vishwanathan, a young student at Harvard University who just in recent weeks was getting all kinds of publicity for the sales of her first novel and for the advance, a cash advance, she had received of over $250,000 for her second novel. But now her publisher has withdrawn her first novel entitled How Opal Matha Got Kissed, Got Wild, and Got a Life. Little Brown, the publisher, now acknowledges that Kavya Vishwanathan had stolen a lot of the material in this book from another. And in this case, She had stolen material from books entitled Sloppy First and Second Helpings, two novels by the young adult writer Megan McCafferty. Now, this is creating quite a stir in Harvard, and you have to realize that this young woman has had quite a reversal in life. Just a month ago, she was being touted and paid as one of the rising stars in youth literature, and now she is seen as someone who stole this material. Her book has been pulled, and I assume the advance that she had received for her second novel is not going to be paid either, but that's between her and her publisher. The bottom line, this is another reminder that your sin will find you out. And when that sin is plagiarism, it can find you out very quickly these days with the rise of the World Wide Web. Mike Straka, writing for Fox News, a commentary, suggests that the recent plagiarism scandal surrounding Harvard sophomore Kavya Viswanathan is yet another symptom of the, quote, me, me, me mentality that too many young people have adopted as religion. Now, he's literally looking here at something very similar to what happened when James Fry, in his supposed memoir, A Million Little Pieces, got in hot water at the beginning of this year, when it was discovered that he made up a lot of what he presented as truth. And you may remember that his publisher, Random House, came out and said, well, you know, sometimes the fiction is more interesting than the truth, and sometimes it's even more meaningful than the truth. Originally, Oprah Winfrey, who had chosen Fry's book as one of her Book of the Month Club selections, she even defended him, suggesting that even if it were not true, his truth was still, quote, meaningful. The word truth there used in quotation marks. But now even Oprah Winfrey has had to repudiate that position and to suggest that making it up and selling it as the truth just isn't right. And now Mike Straka comes back and says, what's going on here with this Harvard plagiarism scandal is another reminder of how loose a generation has become with the truth. Kavya Viswanathan appeared on the Today Show, and when she was confronted with the reality that she had taken all this material from other books, she suggested that it was unintentional. This is her direct quote. When I was writing, I genuinely believed each word was my own, end quote. Well, you know, that would have been believable if she had simply stolen the concepts or borrowed an idea or even kind of borrowed a character. But when you're talking about text that's almost line for line and paragraph for paragraph, guess what? That can't be unintentional. And by the way, one psychiatrist has responded to the claim that she has a photographic memory with the very interesting argument that no one has a photographic memory. I don't know about you, but that comes as kind of a reassurance, because I've always kind of thought I might be envious of someone out there that genuinely had a photographic memory, could look at just a piece of paper, a piece of text, and instantly know it, memorize it, and have it forever emblazoned on his or her mind. But this psychiatrist came out and said that simply doesn't happen. There are certainly persons who have very fine memory skills, especially when it comes to text and to words. But as for a photographic memory, that is really a fiction in itself. Mike Straka went on to say, what now? Will the 19-year-old say that the pressure to live up to such early success caused her to plagiarize another author? Probably. She's already shifted blame to her subconscious, saying that when she read McCafferty's books in high school, quote, they spoke to me in a way that few others had, end quote. Well, when you start looking at all this, it's just a reminder that this is not a new phenomenon. And Mike Straka, writing for Fox News, I think makes a very legitimate point in really trying to get at what's at the base of this. This desire of young persons to have the success and to have the acclaim without doing the work. But I want to come back and say, I think a lot of this went on in times past that has not even now been caught. I think you would discover there's a lot of plagiarism back there. That's not to excuse it at all. To the contrary, it is, let's be very clear, a form of theft. But it is a warning to us that nowadays this theft can be uncovered very, very quickly. We're getting ready for the summer season of denominational conventions, and about this time of year, you get the kind of papers and reports and recommendations and overtures, as they are called in some denominations, that will be presented for ratification or for debate. And, of course, the issue of sexuality, specifically homosexuality, is never far from the horizon there. USA Today reports that delegates from the American Baptist Churches of the Pacific Southwest have already voted 1,125 to 209 to recommend severing ties with the national denomination in a dispute over homosexuality. The issue goes before the region's board of directors on May the 11th, and according to the paper, many in the region's 300 churches are upset that the American Baptist Churches USA has not disciplined congregations with liberal gay policies. Now, let me remind you that this is the region in the Pacific Southwest. That ought to tell you something. And denominations are going to be faced, every church is going to be faced, with a significant test. They will either stand on the authority of God's word and even against criticism and a cultural tide, stand for a biblical vision of sexuality, or they'll capitulate. And we are seeing denominations right now headed towards a very tragic capitulation. But the brave action by these churches in the Southwest here, the Pacific Southwest of the American Baptist churches, is a reminder that denominations will not get by with this without a fight. And they may lose a good many churches as well. Folks, the Church of the Lord Jesus Christ in every generation is confronted with some very basic questions about obedience and disobedience, faithfulness and unfaithfulness. And if on the issue of human sexuality or any other issue, the church capitulates to the spirit of the age, you can spell that unfaithfulness. This is the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. One of the real joys of doing radio like this is the ability to throw your production staff into absolute apoplexy. And I did that earlier in this hour by changing the show topic just as we went on the air. And it's something I do just to kind of keep them on their toes. And now that they have their blood pressure back, I'm going to tell you why we shifted the show topic to immigration. It's because just in the last few minutes, looking at all of this, and I really didn't at the beginning of this day think it was going to be such a big issue for today. But by the end of the day, it is clear that it is. Something like a million persons in the streets of America in different protests, 100,000 in Chicago alone, an estimated 250,000 in Los Angeles. You start adding up these numbers, that's a lot of people on the streets. And, of course, there's a lot of attention there. And what frustrates me is the fact that you have these protests. They say they're protests against stricter immigration controls. The whole idea of this day of protest is supposedly to say, what would it be like if we had a day without immigrants? Well, in one sense, if we just had a day without immigrants, there would be no one here other than Native Americans. Those people indigenous to Northern America who'd be having this kind of discussion. But, you know, there is just a lot of hot air on this issue. It is a serious issue. It's being demagogued all over the place. And I hope today we can perhaps help each other to think about how to think Christianly. We have taken on this issue before, just perhaps started a discussion. I don't think we will conclude it today. This issue is not going away anytime soon, but I have the idea. In fact, it's more than an idea or a hunch. I am confident that there are a lot of you out there who would like to have a say about this as to how we as Christians should think about it. The phone number, 877-893-8255. 877-893-TALK. I got two different kinds of responses to the show we did a couple weeks ago on this. I received an avalanche of email, and I would say that most of it was running in an anti-immigrant direction. In other words, they were saying, I don't want just to grant amnesty or citizenship to persons who came here illegally, something between 11 and 23 million persons here now. But I also had a very consistent number of those who wrote in and said, look, this is a form of prejudice. And I'll tell you, some of these messages did offend me. They were saying, look, this is just anti-Hispanic. Well, since when did this issue become only an Hispanic issue? In other words, are we suggesting that we should have a separate category for Hispanic immigrants than immigrants from any other part of the world? There are people who have tried to get to America from Haiti and the Caribbean, from Africa, from Indonesia, from all over the world. And, of course, our major immigration struggle is with Mexico. But does that mean that we should treat Hispanic persons differently than others? I want to get to the basis of this argument. I'm frustrated right now by what I sense is a superficial discussion of this issue in the mainstream media. And what should be the Christian principles we should think about? Let me just remind you that when we talked about this before, I suggested that we should be ever mindful of the fact that according to the Bible, the people of God should be very concerned for the alien, for the stranger. As a matter of fact, when you read the book of Deuteronomy, you'll discover that one of God's instructions to his people was that they should take care of the widow and the orphan and the alien in their midst. So that is at least a principle, the fact that we need to care for persons. And certainly, just remembering the parable, the rich man and Lazarus, we would not want to feast while there are those who literally would die of famine and neglect at our very feet. We know that that is a portrait of injustice. That raises the other principle, and that is the justice principle. We as Christians must always be concerned, since we are, after all, those who are the worshipers of a just God who demands justice of his people, we should be concerned with how justice can be achieved. Now, in this fallen world, there is no perfect justice. But what are the applications of the principle of justice that we should be concerned about here? Well, it would be just to defend immigration laws. That's a matter of justice. It would be just for us to deal with this as an equity issue. Should any person have any greater right than any other to claim citizenship in the United States? We could deal with justice as a matter of what would be the just response of a nation to upwards of 11 to 20 million undocumented workers here in this country right now. What would justice demand? That is not an easy question. Respect for law. That's another part of justice that some people who cry out the word justice really don't want to think about. You know, what's fair to the state of Arizona or New Mexico? What's fair to California or Florida? You compare that to Arkansas or Oregon or Washington State. You know, what's fair? We're in a federal system. Some states are bearing a greater burden in this than others. What's fair in terms of the rights of those who are citizens now? What's fair concerning those who have been going through the process of legal immigration when the big question now are demands for a citizenship granted to those who have tried to come illegally or indeed have come illegally? Lots of issues here. Let's go to James calling from Johnson City, Tennessee, listening on WHCB. James, what do you think about all this?
Well, I think it's an issue of being racist again as far as the way people are looking at it. And the way they need to look at it is that we're all human beings. It doesn't matter what color, what race we are and everything. And we have just as much right to be here as each other. And it's just coming down to everybody thinks it's unfair that they think they have more rights and they get more cutbacks on taxes and all this stuff. And that's the biggest issue about the whole thing.
Well, James, I appreciate your call. You know, the racial aspect of this or the ethnic language background of this is hard to come up with exactly the right designation. Because when you're talking about Hispanic culture, you're talking about language, culture, an entire cultural system, as a matter of fact. But I did get some letters saying that, look, all this opposition to illegal immigration right now is just a disguised form of discrimination against Hispanics. I don't believe that's so. I don't believe that's so at all. I think right now we are at one of those points in American history in which we better be very, very careful how we think and how we talk about the issue of immigration. It's happened before. There have been flashpoints. There has been violence. There have been riots. There have been times when immigrants have been treated horribly. The Irish were treated that way at some times. Eastern Europeans were treated that way. Needless to say, you add to this complications concerning African-American slavery and all the rest. It is unfair to call them immigrants, by the way. You're now looking at a situation in which the demands of justice applied to this contemporary question are very, very difficult. These demands are very difficult to negotiate. Just sloganeering and throwing out demagogic kinds of speeches here do not help. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Will calling from San Francisco, California, listening on the World Wide Web. Go ahead, Will.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. Wonderful program. I just wanted to say that I also have, I'm a little bit ambivalent about this issue, but I know growing up here in San Francisco, Americans, of course, they want to get the college degree. They want a good job. The immigrants are willing to take the low-end jobs, being janitors of some of these major corporations and things. And they do it to feed the family and hope that their children will be able to have better jobs than they have. And so for me, I mean, from an economic standpoint, they're willing to be in, take jobs that Americans don't want because we're just so highly educated. And then on the other hand, though, is, you know, should they even be in the workforce? So I'm just mixed about this.
Well, Will, you raise an important issue there. Let me ask you, if you were all of a sudden to be the immigration czar of the United States, I'm just appointing you here for a moment, what kind of principle would you have about immigration? I assume you'd have some limits on immigration, wouldn't you?
Yes. It is. Here in San Francisco, there's just so many homeless here, and so many, the poverty here is just amazing just because of the high cost of living. And so a lot of people are moving out here, but at the same time too is there the people that are here, they're trying to make do with what they can. And I think there's just a lot of companies who are willing to, hey, you know, who's going to take this job to clean up the, you know, the garbage and take care of the carpeting and things like that. And the immigrants are saying we're willing to do it at a low cost.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, American businesses have been complicit in this whole immigration issue by granting so many jobs. There's some responsibility there as well. The phone number, 877-893-8255. We'll be right back.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the program, folks. We're talking about immigration. I'm looking at visuals that are pretty powerful here, looking all across America, Chicago, even some unexpected places, Tampa, Florida, Miami. It looks like a lot's going on in this country. Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., Dallas, Texas, Houston, New York City. It looks like there are just a lot of protests going on. I don't know what significant and specific policy proposal these rallies are supposed to be supporting. My guess is they're more about what they are against rather than what they are for, because there are proposals out there, right, very, very clearly intended to limit illegal immigration, to tighten border security, and there are calls for denying those persons who have come here illegally any route towards a legal citizenship. There are those who are talking about very different proposals. Senator McCain and Senator Kennedy co-sponsoring a piece of legislation that would have significantly opened this whole situation to those who are already here, offering them over 11 years a process of going what they call back to the back of the line, paying a fine, proving their worth to society, and then applying for citizenship. I can tell you this, no American political party, neither the Democrats nor the Republicans, are actually going to move on deporting, sending back something between 11 and 20 million persons. That just isn't going to happen. Short of that, what should we do? What will be just? How should Christians think about this? Should we just say we receive all those who come, implying that the nation should have an open borders policy? Or should we say, no, here are some very clear laws that point towards equity, and we'll require persons to live by those laws, and if they break those laws, they'll have to pay the consequences and they'll have to go back to the country from which they came. Between those two polar opposites are probably an almost infinite number of compromises, but right now I see nothing on the horizon that really deals with this issue comprehensively. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Julie, listening on KMMJ, calling from Grand Island, Nebraska. Go ahead, Julie.
Hello. Yes. Well, my thoughts on this as a Christian are that we have some very clear examples or things given in the Bible. For instance, one must have respect for the country if you want to become a citizen and for its laws and its constitution. And Jesus even said that as Christians we were to render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's and unto God the things that are God's. And in so doing, one must have enough respect if they want to become a citizen here to submit to the laws that are in place for immigration. And I think most of us can, I mean, we've traced our family back to the early 1700s, but they came as persons who were known. They came under the laws that were governing that particular era, and they worked and they lived and became citizens. They became Americans. And the thing that I feel is so sad that people would say that you're prejudiced because you want others to respect the laws. Those laws are in place for our safety, just as the laws of God are in place for the safety of his people.
Now, Julie, you make a good point. Forgive me for interrupting you. I want to ask you a question. And this I'll tell you right up front before I ask you this. This, I think, represents the hardest aspect to this. And I'm not sure I have a good answer to this either. But I'd just love to hear what you would say about this. Let's say that there is a Mexican mother and father who are in desperate poverty, and they have young children, and they want better for their children than what they have known. And so following the same kind of hope that others have followed, they find their way into the United States. Now they've been here for 15 years. Their kids are teenagers. They've given birth to other kids who are, by virtue of their birth now, American citizens. Their kids are wearing Nike and Adidas clothing. They're going to American schools. They're deeply embedded in American culture. The mom and the dad have been working hard. They've stayed out of conflict with the law, and they've just been functioning, doing some of the jobs that Americans evidently don't want to do. The question, I think, Julie, is what do we say to that family? And again, I'm not setting you up here because I don't know that I have a good answer to this. But when you think about it, I think that's the big question. We're going to go into a break, and I'm hoping Julie can stay with us and that she can tell us what she's thinking about this when we come back. And that's where I'd like for you to focus as well. Here's the question. Let's look at this family. Let's not look at the demonstrators on the streets, and let's not listen to the politicians in Washington. Let's just think about this family that has come looking for a better life. Yes, they broke the law, the parents, but now they're deeply embedded in this society. What do you do? What would you say to them? The phone number, 877-893-8255. Coast to coast, this is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back. This is the Albert Mueller Program. The topic is immigration, and our focus right now is on a hypothetical Hispanic family that has been in the United States now by illegal immigration for about 15 years. They came, mom and dad, because they were looking for a better life for their kids. They've been working. They've been contributing to society. They came illegally. They broke the law. Now their children are deeply incorporated and enmeshed in American culture. As a matter of fact, those children born here are, by virtue of their birth, American citizens. So what do we say? Do we send the parents back? Do we try to send them all back? Do we send those except those who are American citizens back? You know, what do we do? This is where I want us to focus not on the thousands of people on the streets, nor the Congress in Washington, but on the kind of questions that are at ground level. Because I think we as Christians need to focus on where this really affects people, first of all. We were talking to Julie from Grand Island, Nebraska. I told her I was going to ask her the question, what she would say to that family, and I want to hear. Julie, what would you have to say?
Well, first of all, I would say that I don't know if you are aware of some constitutional attorneys and scholars who have studied the issue of the anchor babies, which you're speaking of, and they say that if the mother is not in compliance, our law for immigration states that the mother must be complying with the jurisdiction of the United States and complying with the laws. Therefore, those children are just as illegal. I know that that is not what's being done, but that's the actual situation.
And that's a great debate, Julie. And by the way, you inform us rightfully by referring to these as anchor babies, because there is the argument that many of these immigrant couples or immigrant adults are actually having these babies in order to bolster their claim to stay. But let me just ask you, Julie, and I've got to move to some other callers here as well. Do you think there's really any prospect that any American political party or government action is going to send millions and millions of persons back? I just don't see that.
Well, I don't know about that, but I would say this. If, as a very poor citizen of this country, I was able to steal a very valuable object that was maybe worth several hundred thousand or $1 million, and from that point on, I lived as a model citizen. Would I be, if I were found out 15 years later, what would your answer be to how I should be treated? Should I not pay for the crime that I have committed? And that's kind of the way I feel. These people are illegal. They are felons. And we need to deal with them on that basis. And I believe that if they've been here the length of time you say have proven themselves, then they would have a great deal of, they would need the support of the community and employers who would vouch for them getting the required papers. But I don't believe that we should be then saying that anyone who comes, because
yes.
Since the talk of amnesty, I'm sure you're aware that the number of those crossing the border has doubled on any given day, and therefore
we set ourselves up for failure there. And Julie, you are a nimble thinker, and I say that with respect. You obviously are thinking fast and trying to think this through. And your question, based upon another kind of crime, what would happen if you had stolen something but had not stolen anything for 15 years, you know, that's not Even though some people would say that's an illegitimate distinction, I don't think it is. I think that's a very interesting kind of parallel, because I think what is being stolen here is a right to citizenship. It's an attempted theft anyway. And so the question is now, what do we do? And I think you're right. I think blanket amnesty would be absolutely wrong. I think that just flies in the face of justice. I'm trying to think through, though, what it means for this country to have allowed this to go on for so long. I mean, at some point, the country itself has to take responsibility for failing to police its borders. I mean, right now, we're saying don't come and come. By offering jobs and, in fact, making much of our economy dependent upon these undocumented workers, I think we're responsible for our own hypocrisy. And so I think we as a nation have to bear some of this responsibility because we have sent a very mixed message. Don't come, it's illegal, you'll be a felon, you have no hope for citizenship, and by the way, we need you to come work and clean our motel rooms and harvest our crops. We just want you to go home after you're finished with that. I think it's a very, very mixed picture. I don't think justice in this this whole picture is very easy to clarify at all, but it's our task. I mean, there's nothing less that is our responsibility. We got another Julie on the line, this one in Louisville, Kentucky, calling, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Julie.
Hello, Dr. Moeller. My concern with a lot of this is, one, I'm not in favor of people breaking the law, but two, we're sending a message, I believe, to our younger people and to our citizenship as a whole that we as Americans who used to be really hard workers and would start at the bottom and work our way up are no longer willing to do that and not even willing to have our children do that. And I believe that's a horrible thing because kids working at, you know, menial jobs, making minimum wage all summer and through school and this and that, teaches them a good, strong work ethic and appreciation of those who do have less than them.
Yeah, I agree, Julie. I think that's a good point, and I appreciate you calling. I think in a lot of ways it tells us something, though, of the traditional progress of immigrant groups in America. As a matter of fact, there's a book that I've cited before entitled How the Irish Became White. And it has to do with the Irish coming to the United States, and it's an historical look at how they came from being in much of the same situation that you would describe many Hispanic groups in America today to being at the very elite of the society. At one point, it was the Irish who had the most menial jobs in cities like Boston and New York and Philadelphia. But, of course, by the time you reach 1960, you have an Irish Catholic elected president of the United States. But the very fact that he was Irish was for many people just as bizarre as the fact he was Catholic in the historical perspective of 1960. But now we wouldn't even think about it. 40-plus years later, the Irish are just considered very much a part of the American mainstream. We are a changing people. Let's go very quickly to Deborah calling from Fayetteville, North Carolina. Go ahead, Deborah.
Hi. Dr. Moeller, thank you first and foremost for bringing this issue out and making more of an issue of following the legal lines of this than the racism issue, which so many people keep trying to interject into this. I'm sure you can tell by my last name that I'm married to a Hispanic. And his father and his family came over here three generations ago from Spain legally. And even my father-in-law is up in arms at the way that illegals are trying to push this more and more so as a racism issue than it is to follow the laws of this land. We as Christians, yes, we are to love them, and we are to be have a Christ-like attitude towards them, but in that message itself, we have to obey the laws of the land.
All right, Debbie, thank you so much. I'm sorry, we're going right into a break. Thanks for your call. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. You know, I promise you we will return to this discussion. Clearly, there are a lot of folks out there who want to talk about this, and all of our callers today have something important to say, and so do those in line that we just couldn't take, simply for sake of time. We will get back to this. I think the issue is going to evolve. Right now, we're looking at the public protest level, and it's big. It's not exactly like the Civil War the Civil Rights demonstrations of the 1960s. And it's not just like some of the big protest movements that have taken place even in recent times, such as the protests against the WTO and different things like that. What we have right now is, I think, larger than the WTO demonstrations and smaller than the civil rights movement. And the question is whether or not this is something that's going to grow or if this is something like a flash in the political pan. I have to tell you, I think it's not a flash, because this is a problem that's not going to go away. We have in this country between 11 and 24 million undocumented or illegal aliens. Now, even the nomenclature here is a matter of political dispute. Do you just call them undocumented workers? That's what a lot of people want to say. That means they're workers without papers. But actually, they're not just here lacking those papers. They're here having committed a crime in violating the laws of the United States and entering without permission. And now they are here. Many of them have been here for a long time. I want to come back to something I said earlier. Who's responsible for this? I mean, we're talking about law breaking. But when you have a situation in which the law has been broken by literally millions of persons, you have to raise the question, who's been serious about upholding the dignity of that law? In some sense, the United States as a government has been derelict in that duty. And one of the big problems now is that every time someone comes along and says, let's grant an amnesty for those who are here, but then let's clamp down on illegal immigration at the borders, you get number one without number two. The second part just doesn't happen. And part of the problem here is that you have hundreds and hundreds of miles of an undefended border with an ally to our south, Mexico, that hasn't done its job in helping to restrain illegal immigration as well. You have American businesses who've been inviting these persons to work. You have all kinds of things, especially when it comes to, for instance, the agriculture business and the harvesting of crops in California, in the San Joaquin Valley, and all this. I mean, you're talking about illegal immigrants doing a great deal of that work. So when you talk about the dignity of law and the demands of justice, it's not as if what you simply have is two parties, the United States of America and illegal immigrants. You have a lot of other parties who are a part of this as well. You have the economic reality, you have the business interest, and you also have the political interest of those who are running for office. Right now, that is a big part of this equation, because every politician and both political parties are trying to figure out, how can we get out of this with the least damage and the greatest advantage? We as Christians have to look a lot deeper than that. I'll meet you tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. I'm Albert Mohler.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.